Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. The relentless Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into the Wednesday edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. I'm your host, Mark King. For this show, as we do every single week on this show, we have Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, joining us today. But before we get there, make sure you go subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast platform you're using. If you're in Apple iTunes, make sure you go rate and review the show. It really helps us out. Joe, what's going on, man?
Not too much. I'm doing better than the Memphis Grizzlies are of late. The last couple games have not been very friendly to the Bears of Beale Street. First Martin Luther King Jr. Day, where things went really poorly for them against the Pelicans, and that continued into Boston against the Celtics. So as high as the seven-game winning streak was, it feels like the two-game losing skid now, I guess you can call it, is maybe snapping people back to reality. A la Rabbit in 8 Mile.
Yeah, it's it has definitely, I would say, come crashing down, but it's definitely been different in terms of the way they've been losing. And I just want to, you know, let's talk about these two games for a second, because the Grizzlies have lost in similar fashion in both games. I mean, they've seen some guys that wouldn't probably normally take those many shots and hit that many shots across these two games, hit things and shoot really well. And I said on Twitter against the Pelicans, I said it last tonight, that yes, they're making the shots, but the Grizzlies are definitely not doing them any favors by giving them wide open shots. I mean, it has been similar in the sense that it's been a lot of defense. I would assume that the Grizzlies, you know, tend to get a lot of their offense sometimes in fast break, transition points, early threes, that type of offense. So do you think that it's mainly their defense, or what's your take on and how they're losing these last two games?
I think that they are what they've always been. And, you know, I've taken some heat for it the last couple of weeks, and that's understandable to an extent when you're in the spot that people like you and I are, as, you know, you're more of a media member than me, but when you're in the spot of having opinions and a platform for them to be criticized, you're going to get shot at a little bit in terms of some hot takes. But my consistent take has always been they're a young, inexperienced team. They're going to have highs and they're going to have lows. And as high as the last, you know, the seven-game winning streak was, you know, the two-game losing streak, they're losing games the way they did the first quarter of the season. They're not scoring at the rate that they were during the winning streak. And we knew that wasn't going to be sustainable because they were doing it at the rate of the, you know, the peak Golden State Warriors. And then from there, the defense has been a struggle for them all season long. They had some success during the winning streak, but it's not like they were dominant on that end of the floor. They were just better than the team they were playing. And I think that you're starting to see them snap back to reality a little bit. Use the phrase again. This is who they are, and this is who they've always been. And that doesn't mean that they're not going to have another winning streak later in the season. It just means that how you perceive them has to stay consistent. They're going to win. They're going to lose. They're going to go through streaks of good play. And it's going to be followed by runs of bad play. And that's the reality of watching a young, inexperienced team where your two best players, I think it's fair to say at this point, are, you know, younger than 21. And obviously Valanciunas has done some good things. But beyond that, when your youngest, or when your best players, excuse me, are two of the youngest guys on the roster, or the two youngest guys on the roster, you're not going to be a consistently good basketball team. At least history says you're not going to be. And I think this is just that coming back around to rear its head. And it's not fun to say that. You would much rather watch them be in the playoff hunt and dream about Ja versus LeBron in his rookie season. And I get that. That's part of what makes being a fan great. But, you know, I just have always preferred the realistic version of what to expect from this team. And, you know, I haven't really deviated from that. So I'm not surprised that they've lost these games because, to be honest with you, I kind of expected it. I expected them to come back to earth a little bit, and that's what's happened. Their defense is not particularly good. Their offense has cooled off, and the result is getting beat by two teams that are performing offensively at a similar rate to what the Grizzlies were doing to people during their winning streak.
It is a situation, yes. They weren't going to win every single game. That just, like, they were going to come back to earth, no doubt about that for sure. They were never going to keep winning at this rate. And quite frankly, I'm surprised they won that many in a row. I mean, it's fun to watch, but it was always going to end. And so, how do they go forward? Do you think it matters from here? I mean, obviously, I think Armari said on my show on the show yesterday that Ja was not feeling well on Monday. Obviously, Jaren still. It's hard to diagnose who's playing bad and good in these games like this, just because they're so, like, kind of throw them out, because it's such a bad game. It's always hard to diagnose who's playing really well and really bad. But is it a rookie wall thing for Ja? I mean, obviously he's not feeling well, but it's even before Monday, he really hasn't looked quite like he had in that, you know, first part of that winning streak and before. I mean, obviously he's going to hit that rookie wall, but I think we're seeing this right now in front of our eyes.
I think that he's not feeling well, and I think that he is playing more basketball than he's ever played before. I think that he's a player that is taking on more contact in a different type of physicality than he saw in the Ohio Valley Conference. And I think all that is okay. And again, it's natural for a rookie, it's natural for any NBA player to hit a slump. I mean, good Lord, look what's happening to James Harden. You can make an argument that James Harden at his peak was the very best offensive player in the history of the NBA when
right.
He's at his very strongest. And he has been atrocious scoring the basketball, at least until recently. I haven't checked if they're playing tonight and how he's doing. But in recent games, including the game against the Grizzlies, he was really, really bad. So everybody goes through these slumps, and that doesn't make Ja any better or worse or make his spring any lower. We live in, and I know we've talked about this before, Mark, we live in an instant gratification world. Everybody wants everything to happen immediately. Every game is an indictment on the season or on whether or not a player is good. You have to have a more long-term view of things, especially when you're in the midst of a rebuild. And just because they've lost these two games, Mark, I still think they're ahead of schedule. Like, people are going to say that I'm the positive one now because the world's going to be falling for some folks. And, I mean, they're still eight wins away from beating the season total for over-under. And that was my goal for them, just get the over. And that's very realistic still. So they're ahead of schedule. That is still an accurate statement to me, even after getting blown out the last two games. So I think that, you know, hopefully – it opens people's eyes, and I know we'll talk more about this in a little bit. I hope it opens people's eyes. Jay Crowder's not very good. I can appreciate, and I know you've heard this, covering the team and being there in media scrums, and I get that Jay is an important veteran leader. I understand that. And I also understand that you need veterans on a young team. That all makes sense. If somebody offers a second-round pick in Justin Jackson from the Dallas Mavericks, if the Mavericks, for whatever reason, offer that for Jay Crowder, you'd do it immediately. Before they change their mind, you submit the paperwork. Same thing with the Solomon Hill trade. Any asset that you can acquire that can help you down the road, whether it's the next Dylan Brooks potentially, or whether it's an add-on to a future trade to sweeten the pot for somebody to move up in a draft, you know, it doesn't have to be taken. Even if it's the 52nd overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft, you can use that to move up in a future draft or a previous draft in a draft going on currently to help you move up two spots to get the next Brandon Clark that tumbles down the draft board. And I think that's what people lose sight of when they see a team having success. Again, you see them winning and you think that it's because of the chemistry that's being developed And to an extent, that's true. But as bad as it sounds, in 2020, that doesn't matter. I want them to be set up to be winning and winning at a level that is complementary to championship contention, which is realistic for them in the next 2 to 3 years. I think that is a realistic window. When you try to rush things and you try to lose opportunity to acquire assets, that's where you lose me in terms of the length of this rebuild. I'm just taking a more long-term view of it than I think some people did with the recent stretch of good play.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a situation. You know what? Let's take a quick break. Let's come back and let's get into a little bit more of the Jay Crowder, the trading, all that stuff. It's because that's coming up soon. I want to talk with you about that. That's coming up in just a few weeks, trade deadline. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back and we'll talk more on trade deadline stuff.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle on your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/lockedonNBA. Unlock content to help you focus, e-stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockedonNBA. That's calm.com/lockedonNBA. Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on all the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much, much bigger payout. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in your pocket in free money just to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back to the show. I wanted to take a break because we got to get that in at a certain time before we get into this conversation. But so I just want to make sure I'm hearing you clear. You're saying the conversation of Jay Crowder and whether you would trade him or not is you would trade him for practically anything, like a ham sandwich. Like is there a conversation for you to be had that makes sense in the terms of keeping Jay Crowder throughout the year, of what he's done for the team, or the locker room, all that stuff? You're saying it, you're trading him for literally anything you can get. Like, what's the line there for you? Is there a line there? Is for me, I think there's a certain line in terms of once you get down into the second round, I think it's a conversation that you got to have. I don't know what you get out of that conversation, but I think it's definitely something you need to have. What about you?
What was your view of Tayshaun Prince when he was a Memphis Grizzly?
Of Tayshaun Prince, my view was he was good, and he was good, not great.
Good, not great. Okay, yeah. That's very friendly, because Tayshaun Prince was not very good at all. And yeah. Tayshaun Prince, what made Tayshaun Prince great for that Western Conference Finals run? Because there's people listening to this saying this is sacrilege. Tayshaun Prince helped the team get to the Western Conference Finals. That's true. What made Tayshaun Prince great is he was able to facilitate. He was able to be a positive defender. He was able to score when necessary, and he was able to get the hell out of the way of Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley when those guys were going off. That was what made Tayshaun great and what made him better for that particular roster that year than Rudy Gay. You are currently looking at Jay Crowder as Tayshaun Prince, but shooting the ball almost as much as anybody on the team. And that is not a successful recipe for moving forward, developing these guys, these young players. I understand that Jay Crowder has been a veteran presence. I know, I believe it was in Peter Edmiston's article where they talked about Jay being traded and how that would be hard. I think Dylan Brooks said that. This is a business, okay? And I do think that you have to take into consideration, even if it's something, like I said in the previous segment, that you don't view as good value. I use Justin Jackson as an example. I don't know if Dallas does that trade, but insert any 24-year-old wing that fits within that cap space with Crowder and obviously Memphis has trade exceptions and things like that. Insert any wing like that who has potential but would be a role player probably at best. And a second-round pick that you can take that second-round pick. And again, even if it's to move up two spots in a first round in the future, to me, that has more value, the potential of that, than 40 games of Jay Crowder. Now, if you plan on re-signing Jay Crowder, I guess I can hear that argument. And I do believe, and we talked about this on GBB Live this week with Mike Prada of SB Nation, our podcast over Grizzly Bear Blues, he said, and I didn't think about it this way, you know, we worry about Dylan Brooks being able to go to a reserve role coming off of being a starter the way that he has been for the Grizzlies throughout much of his career. Jay Crowder, that's not going to be a concern. Like, if Memphis upgrades their wing positions and they bring in two new starters at shooting guard and small forward, the two and the three, you don't have to necessarily worry about Jay Crowder being a malcontent. I think it's possible that Dylan Brooks isn't very happy about that reality if it happens. But Jay Crowder will go and be a reserve. And I do think that that is where the value of Jay Crowder is a little bit better. If you make that argument and you want to spin it that way and you want to bring him back for that veteran presence, that's fine. But Jay Crowder is very much outside of role right now, both in terms of minutes he's playing, both and in terms of the amount of shots he's taking. And I think that's partially because he's being empowered to do it by Taylor Jenkins, which I think is one of the missteps of this season so far. And it's not even necessarily Jay Crowder's fault. I don't think he's doing anything that the coaching staff and his teammates don't want him to do, but it's not conducive to full rebuilding. You know, you can be a veteran presence like Tayshaun Prince was for that team several years ago now. You can be a veteran presence who steadies things and not try to overtake games and go outside of what your potential is or what your production is on any given night. And I think Jay Crowder does that too much. I don't see the value in that long term in his current role. If you think that you can talk him into being a reserve off the bench and you move on, obviously, from Josh Jackson and things like that, then maybe you could get my support more. But in his current state, the way he is, the way they're using him, while I think it's unlikely they trade him because of how vital he's been, I do think they'll listen to deals. And if I were them, which I'm not, of course, I would make a move for, like you called it, a ham sandwich. I would say I would make a move for less than what others would, but I still see value in it compared to what Jay is, again, in the grand scheme of the rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, my whole thing was that there is a point in time, whatever that line is for you as the Grizzlies front office, there is a situation where maybe that's the 50th overall pick, maybe that's the 40th overall pick, I don't know. But there is a line where you at least have to internally say, okay, let's discuss this, because you know what Jay has done for the locker room, and Taylor, that's his guy. Like, that is 100% his guy in the locker room. He is the guy who delivers what Taylor wants him to deliver, as far as just telling the other guys what's going on. Like, that is 100% true. So I think there's a certain point where you at least have that conversation, and whether that conversation ends up being, okay, let's do it anyway because it doesn't matter, or let's keep him, it doesn't matter. You know, like, that's something that's a real thing. Like, even if you keep him and you come off the cap space, like, you know, relief of cap space is still an asset in this league. And I think people tend to forget that, in the sense that when you get relief of cap space, if you trade at Jay Crowder and you bring on someone that has multiple years on a contract, then, you know, that person may be better and whatever, however you view that. But Jay Crowder, relief of cap space coming off your books is still an asset. And so, again, I think that their market will be more than a ham sandwich or a late second round pick for Jay Crowder. So I don't think that this conversation, I don't think it's going to matter in the long run in 2 weeks. I think that it's still going to be a situation where there is a market for Jay Crowder's services on a team. Where are you think that there's a market out there that they're going to get good value back for him and or Solomon Hill?
I think it's possible. I do believe, and Peter Emerson, again, to quote his article in The Athletic, he did a great job talking about trade ideas, or most likely to be traded. I think he put him in tiers. Outside of Andre Iguodala, who's definitely not going to be on this team in 2 weeks, he's most certainly going to be traded. I think that of those two, and we talked about this on our podcast as well, I believe that Solomon Hill makes sense to trade because I think that he's a contract that obviously is expiring as well. And I see him as someone who fits more front court positions for a contender, but not everybody agrees with that. I think they're kind of interchangeable. And I think Solomon Hill is more likely to be moved because he has the lesser range of the rotation. Again, Jay Crowder, I think, has started every game that he's been able to play. You know, Jay has been a starter. At one point, he was leading the team in minutes played. He still may be, even after the Celtics game. I haven't had a chance to look that up. But the last time I checked, Jay Crowder was first on the team in minutes played. That would be a pretty drastic change for a young team. So I think that's another, you know, possible argument for keeping Crowder beyond the salary cap space, which I do think is fair. And you can say the same thing about Hill. An argument for keeping him is, you know, you go away from Jay Crowder, you start someone new. You know, that's a pretty drastic shift for somebody like Ja Morant, who's developing timing with teammates and things like that. That's not a reason to keep a player long term, but I do think you have to weigh how valuable is that disruption, not necessarily to Ja's development, but to the roster's chemistry in that moment, not for a playoff push, but just for general competitive play. So I think that Crowder is the better player, so therefore he makes more sense to be moved. But at the same time, in terms of importance to what the Grizzlies are trying to do, Crowder is more relevant to Hill. So the price for Crowder may be too high, whereas the price for Hill, it can almost be a bargain for a veteran team that's trying to make a championship push. You know, if you have somebody at the end of your bench like a Courtney Lee in Dallas who's not really doing much for you, and you like what Solomon Hill could do, you know, that's a pretty even, you know, cap shift. And you just give up a random second round pick for the Grizzlies and, you know, you've got a deal. So that could definitely be something that occurs. It goes both ways. I think Crowder's the better player, but because of that and because of his role with the Grizzlies this season, I could see them valuing him more than perhaps other teams would, and that could lead to an impasse for a trade.
Solomon Hill, the poor man's Jay Crowder. That's what I'm hearing.
Something like that.
Yeah, all right. Like that. I like it. Let's take one more quick break. We'll be right back. We'll finish up with Joe Mullinex from site manager from Grizzly Bear Blues. Welcome back to the show. Finishing up with Joe Mullinex, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues. You know, I'm sitting here watching this Pelicans game with Zion. Why Zion coming back? And they have talked almost as much about Ja Morant as they had about Zion Williamson tonight, which is impressive considering Ja Morant's not in this game and the Grizzlies have already played and they lost. And I thought like, that's really impressive. That's what, like, that's like the Ja Morant effect for this team, which is kind of crazy. I think I just wanted to throw that out there. That's really impressive for them to just talk nonstop about Zion. Would you still take Zion over Ja now that I'd say that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I would. And I do think there's some revisionist history. I talked with Gary Parrish about this on my weekly hit with him on 92.9 in Memphis. I think that it's definitely a compliment to Ja. It's not as clear cut as it once was. Like, I would say even before, like right before the 7-game win streak, where Ja was still having some success offensively. It just wasn't, you know, at the elite production we saw during the seven game winning streak. To me, it was crystal clear that you would still go Zion because it was the Zion draft. You know, Memphis was excited to get Ja, but if the Pelicans had lost their mind and taken Ja on the first overall pick, you know, Memphis would have screamed and sprinted to take Zion Williamson second overall, and they would have declared it a massive victory. So I do believe that it's still the Zion pick. I think that, he has the potential to be one of those shooting star type of players who maybe doesn't stick around very long because, and I talked to Gary about this, you know, weight is weight. Mass is Mass. And even though he's essentially the Incredible Hulk playing basketball, and I don't know any sane person that would call him fat, he's still an extremely large human being. And it's going to have issues on his ankles and his knees. And the way he plays the game, it just doesn't add up in terms of a long-term career. But you could have said the same, and I know I get made fun of for this, and other people on Twitter do. Ja Morant, early in his run, wasn't falling very well. He was not taking care of his body. He wasn't finishing very well at the basket. There were some scary, you know, dives and falls. But if you watch Ja play now, he is more understanding of that. He's not doing the same type of, you know, desire to just go for the highlight finish. You know, he'll do layups over the top of a big, or he'll dish out to Jaren or somebody in the corner before taking on that contact. You know, Ja is learning more and more how to play the game, whereas Zion, you know, the Pelicans have done as much as they can to help him lose the weight, and he's just not able to lose that muscle mass. So I think Ja is going to continue to develop the way he plays, and that will be conducive to a long-term career, whereas Zion will probably be more of a 3 or 4 year wonder. At least that's what it looks like today. All that being said, I think we're applying hindsight that didn't exist then. If the Pelicans had taken Ja Morant one overall with Zion Williamson on the board, the Pelicans would have been crucified. Like, they would have been absolutely destroyed. And can you imagine if Zion hits the way that people expect Zion to hit, and the millions upon millions of dollars that you lose in business revenue? And it's just, it's too easy to look at it now and say, oh, they should have taken Ja. It's still Zion for me until he shows he can't stay on the floor. Because even in summer league, when he was on the floor, he really displayed what makes him special and what will make him, you know, a threat for, or excuse me, a piece for the Pelicans as they enter their own playoff push, you know, competing with the Grizzlies and the Spurs and others at the bottom of the Western Conference for the eighth seed. The Pelicans are right in that mix, just like anybody else, because of the talent that they have assembled, and obviously adding Zion to the fold should only help that if he's able to stay healthy. That's a big if, though.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, they asked Martin Jackson about it, and Jeff Van Gundy on the broadcast. Jackson said he would take Ja Morant, and Jeff Van Gundy said he would not make a determination because he hadn't seen Zion play, which is fair. It's totally fair. When watching him play this preseason, he looked like a freaking superstar, but obviously it's preseason, so you take that with a grain of salt. But, like, you know, I obviously my love for Ja Morant is already known on this show, but still, like, I think it's, I don't think it has to be one or the other. Like, I think it's okay to say, I think they can be 1A and 1B. Like, I think it's very possible they can both be dynamic superstars in this league. And like you mentioned, sure. Yeah, you know, Zion's a little heavier, and we'll see how that works out for him. So I'm excited to see him play. And if he tells you anything about the business side of things, they've had a camera trained on Zion, and they go back to him, like, even on the bench, he's just sitting there sweating. That's all he's doing. But every timeout shot,
they,
like,
moved that game to ESPN solely for Zion Williamson.
Oh, 100%.
They haven't done that for Ja Morant yet. And Zion Williamson hadn't played a minute of NBA meaningful basketball until tonight. Tells you everything you need to know right there.
Well, it tells you, and also the NBA put Zion and Ja on the MLK game because they wanted that to be Zion and Ja the first time you see those guys. I mean, like, it was clear as day why they did that. So, like, Zion Williamson makes the business go round right now. So it's exciting to watch. We got off track, and that's okay. Cause it's still Grizzlies related sort of through Ja Morant, but I'll ask you this before we get out of here. Quick question, and then we'll leave it at that. If you had to pick your choice of a good solid wing, the Grizzlies to come back and get in any trade, where are you going to go?
Well, I think there's, you know, ideal situations. If the Nuggets decided to give up on Gary Harris, for example, I think he'd be a really good fit in terms of a 3-and-D wing next to Jaren and Ja. If you could get Joe Harris from the Nets, who's going to be a free agent, but, you know, acquiring him could maybe give you an inside positioning on negotiations with him for a contract. I think there's value with him. I like Justice Winslow from Miami, but those are all kind of pie-in-the-sky guys. I think if you are Memphis, you're looking for someone that you think could fit next to Jaren and Ja long-term, that fits in that timeline, you know, 23 to 25 years old, that could be a rotation player for you, that you won't have to overpay to retain. You know, Malik Beasley stands out in my mind for the Denver Nuggets. That's someone that you'll still have to pay, but he could be a reserve guard or maybe even a starter potentially, depending on what happens with Dylan Brooks. I think somebody like a Justin Jackson, I mentioned him earlier, for the Dallas Mavericks, he makes sense in terms of being a combo forward who could shoot the ball. You know, those are two guys just off the top of my head, but there's lots of names that float out there that could really be nice pieces next to Jaren and Ja. And that has to remain the focus. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but everything they do, and I do think, and credit to Zach Kleiman and Wexler and the crew over at FedEx Forum, they've done nothing to show that this isn't what they're already planning. Regardless of the recent run of success, and obviously they've cooled off a bit now, the long-term fits are what matter here. If you think Jay Crowder is a long-term fit, I disagree with that, but they have earned credit with me to say, hey, let's see if it works. If they decide to move on from Jay Crowder and they pursue somebody like a Justin Jackson in a second-round pick, that makes Dallas better now than they were with Justin Jackson, but I would argue that hurts Dallas long-term because I think Jackson has the potential to become a player that fits a little bit better and is a little bit cheaper than Jay. So it's those types of guys that are kind of on the fringes of the rotation for contenders, at least playoff contenders. I don't know if anybody thinks Dallas is a title contender, but Dallas will be in the playoffs, and I'm sure Mark Cuban wants to be competitive. He hasn't had that opportunity in a while. Same thing with Denver, of course. They're going to be looking for wings. You know, I think they are – I forget who tweeted it out, but somebody said like Mason Plumlee, which would be hilarious because you'd be bringing in a Plumlee brother after releasing a Plumlee brother before the season started. But the Plumlee player, the Plumlee brother, that plays for the Nuggets, a first-round pick for Andre Iguodala. And that's an expiring contract too, the Plumlee contract is. So I would do that tomorrow. I think that would be a great trade for the Grizzlies. So whether it's bringing in somebody for draft pick considerations or whether it's bringing in a young player, you know, I think that the key for Memphis is to always keep their eye on that North Star, so to speak, of what's best for, you know, 2022, 2023, 2024, when you're really hoping to be in that title hunt with the peak of Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant approaching. You want to have the pieces in place to be as competitive as possible then. Right now, you're just trying to figure out what type of archetype player fits best with them, and that needs to be where that process lies, regardless of who sticks around through the trade deadline.
I think you're absolutely right. It'll be fun to watch over the next few weeks and see what the Grizzlies are going to do. I mean, they strike me as a front office that will probably do stuff a little earlier than they have in the past, so we will see what happens. It'll be fun and interesting to watch as we get closer to the trade deadline. Joe, I appreciate you joining me. We will have the trade deadline covered on this show. You guys will have it covered on grizzlybearblues.com. Speaking of Peter Edmondson and that article you mentioned several times, he will be on the show tomorrow to talk about this very article that you have mentioned. So I appreciate the tease for tomorrow's show. Anything that you got out right now that Grizzlies fans can read over at grizzybearblues.com?
Well, we're doing a great job of game coverage. Our staff does a remarkable job. I would say we cover the Grizzlies about as in-depth as anybody, if not more. Obviously, it benefits you to have a staff of, you know, 10 to 15 writers that are willing to write. So that's one of the positives of the spot that we're in at GBB. So, you know, there's report cards, there's recaps, there's in-depth breakdowns. Sean Coleman did a great job breaking down just how historic John Morant's recent run of success has been. So make sure you're checking out that article. He does a great job with the 3&D podcast as well. Parker Fleming has a core four talking with Jack Noonan, who is an associate editor for us at GBB, but he is also a Celtics blogger. So it was a unique perspective for him to hear the debate and to convey from the Celtics perspective, what was fascinating to me. So even though that game is over, I think that's a good podcast listen. And I had Mike Prada on GBB Live, our main podcast, to talk about Jaren Jackson Jr. in a piece he wrote for him for SB Nation. So podcasts, articles, we've got a lot of good content over at GBB that people can come over and check out.
I appreciate you joining me, Joe. We'll do it again next week, my man.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.